You just found the most entertaining Iowa football podcast in the ecosystem. It's the Washed Up Walk-Ons, and boys, we are in game week. That's right, Utah State on Saturday. Today on the show, Nick DeMarco shows his face for the third time. He is the head strength coach for Elon University, was an assistant when we were in Iowa City. He's forgotten more about training athletes than most people know. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, to the last non-in-season related podcast for a while. And to close out a pretty fantastic summer, we've got an all-time savage, lifetime weight shark, fucking former coach at Iowa now, absolute legend in the strength conditioning game, author, multiple-time guest of the podcast, homie for life, DeMarco. What's going on, pal?
Can't match that intro, but greatly appreciated.
Forgot CrossFit athlete too, by the way.
Yeah, but see, I leave that out because I can't.
Important one. Joining us all the way from the East Coast in
Elon.
Yeah, in the Carolinas.
Shout out Elon! Big game this week, ACC Network Thursday night, baby.
Who y'all play?
Wake Forest.
Gang. Fuck Wake Forest.
They just got a brand new facility. See that video?
Very, very sick facility at that.
So sick.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing well. That coach has done a really good job there, honestly.
What is it? I guess it's not really your job to, but I mean, it is because you're part of the culture. What is it like being the smaller school going into a game like that? Knowing that they're basically paying you to come and get a win, right? Like for their program. How does the head coach at Elon approach that? Like, what is the mentality there?
Kind of differs, honestly. The first year I was here, our old coach, he's now James Madison, and they've done a heck of a job there. But yeah. We played
that's South one double Florida. A, right?
So FCS. We're FCS currently. JMU just moved to the Sun Belt and actually won the Sun Belt in their first year.
Oh,
in it.
Really?
They were in our conference. Prior to that,
they so won it.
James wasn't James
they
Madison
technically
playing?
Technically won it. They were the regular season champs, but they were not able to play in the championship because they just joined the conference. Like the rule exists for teams who move down, but it's somehow still in place if you move up. So they moved from FCS to FBS, and in their first year, absolutely.
I remember
watching them play in FCS national championship while we were in college still.
Yes. Yeah, correct. They have been kind of at the top, similar to North Dakota State. Not as successful with the national championships, but they've been great. So they joined the Sun Belt and they were the regular season champs of the Sun Belt. I think this year they can actually play for a conference title, but anyway, their head coach, my first year here, we played South Florida, who at the time was actually rolling pretty good. And the only goal of the game was to get out of it healthy and get some reps for guys. You just kind of know that you're going to go down there and take your licks. But we ended up being in the game for most of the game. 2019, we played Wake Forest, and they just absolutely pounded us. We had no chance. 2021, we played Appalachian State, and we're actually in a pretty good battle with them the whole time. And our head coach now has always been pretty adamant of, like, we're going in there to try and win the game, and we've coached that way and we've played that way. So I think, you know, at the FCS level, winning a national championship is not even something that really puts you on a huge radar. Beating FBS teams puts you on the radar. I think, you know, it's a game though where you're playing with house money. Nobody expects you to win. There's really no pressure, and for guys at this level, it's a chance to actually play on a huge stage. You know, our games are far better than the games I took part of at William Penn University, but they are certainly nothing in comparison to going into Kinnick Stadium. So it gives them a unique experience as well.
You guys,
I have a hard time imagining that Wake Forest is going to have a more physically prepared team than you guys. Because you guys have been doing a damn good thing over there for like a handful of years now. Your whole squad is DeMarco trained now.
Yeah, we're this is year six, so it's been really cool to even with the COVID year, see a class all the way through, start to finish. Have some freshmen that graduated. One of them is actually a strength coach now.
How fucking off the charts are their comparisons from when they walked in?
Crazy.
And to now?
Huge. But you'll find that everywhere. I mean, you're getting guys around the end of puberty, and like you just hit a second puberty basically when you go to college and you understand what a free dining hall is, and you get exposed to strength and conditioning for the first time. I mean, things are gonna take off really, as long as you don't get in their way.
It's like PEDs, honestly,
for sure.
Doyle used to say you should go in there and smell the weights and get stronger.
Yep.
Virtually everyone should early in their career. But what I've been really pleased with is like you go somewhere and you have ideas of, okay, you know, at Iowa, we had our tiered program of the developmental card, Devo 2, advanced, and you want to go into somewhere and try and do things similar. But until you actually see a class through from freshman to senior or even a redshirt senior, you don't actually know if what you're doing is going to work long term. But seeing now two classes fully through where guys in their senior year are still hitting PRs on vertical jump, still hitting PRs on their 10-yard dashes, broad
jump. And that's with their body weight being up 10, drastically. 15, you know, 20%.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's relatively easy to continue to gain strength in a 4 or 5 year window. But I think where most programs are probably missing out is making sure that they're actually becoming better athletes. Like it's easy to get those gains early on when strength is kind of that rising tide that lifts all ships. But eventually those strength gains don't just directly correlate to your vertical jump going up, running faster, and just being overall better athlete. So continuing to refine those things. And then obviously a huge marker is just keeping guys as healthy as you can too.
Yeah.
That peak that you get to as an athlete is really frustrating because, like, we still had those Iron Hawk numbers to shoot for and everything, and everybody's always trying to PR. But you're pushing your body as hard as you can, and there's just no more room. It's just not moving anymore.
I still feel like I'm doing it every day right now.
Yeah. It is. It's certainly easier when you get those novelty gains because, you know, everybody for any skill –
you feel like a superhuman.
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody has some bandwidth of improvement that they can get. And early on, you're just getting exponential gains, and you think that is going to last forever, and it just certainly does not.
Not only because they get older, and now they've been exposed to the stimulus, and you start to, like, it's diminishing returns, but also they start to become more important as part of the actual football team. And
for sure.
You can't just, I mean, the freshmen during the season when we were playing are grinding. They're grinding. I mean, they are. So it's like, yay, if you're not playing, you're getting stronger. It is an important point, though, that you made, like trying to not just make sure that guys are getting stronger, but more importantly, making them better athletes. I would argue there's probably a lot. God, it's unbelievable that it's still this way. But from what I can tell, there's still a lot of programs around the country where they're getting stronger, and it's not necessarily making them better athletes. It might be making them worse athletes in some cases because they're prioritizing the strength too much.
Yeah, there's a huge percentage of strength coaches who live and die by the strength is never a weakness quote, which is accurate that it is not directly a weakness, but when that is your whole pursuit is just get stronger in lieu of getting better tactically, technically, you know, physically, and other markers other than just strength, you're going to have a lot of problems on the football field because the strongest guy is very, very rarely the best athlete on the team. You will have really freaky guys like your best vertical jump guys, your best 10-yard dash guys, there's some of those guys too. John Ross goes out and runs like a 4.2 or whatever. He's not the best football player in the world. But those things at least put you, you know, there's barriers to entry for everything. You have to have a certain level of strength, certain level of speed to be a quality player. But those things do not make the entire thing go. Like, you have to have a lot more than that.
Do you have numbers of, you know, like 2X bodyweight squat, 2.5 deadlift, where you're trying to get guys, and then on the top end, if you've got really, really strong dudes or really, really fast dudes, some top end numbers where you're like, okay, you're good, we need to like balance you out and use our time that we have with you to actually bring up a different aspect of your athleticism?
Yeah, I kind of got the same question, because like, if a guy can squat, I know you guys are doing more unilateral, but if a guy can reach a certain unilateral number that is just to the point where it's like, being stronger does not benefit. Do you start to move them and like, let's move this weight as fast as you can, let's do different movements to try and become more athletic on top of that strength? Or because is there like a point where you just don't need to get stronger, basically?
Yeah. So we, me and Jordan Nusma, he works with the 49ers now. He's an assistant strength coach out there. We went through and basically just looked at all the data after we had like 2 years of data, because we were doing the same thing. So we have a foundation program, foundation plus, advanced, advanced plus. And at first it was just basically training maturity. Okay, you've been in the program, Drake, for 3 years. You play snaps, you're a strong kid, you're on the advanced card. Versus when you come in, you're right on that foundation card. Foundation plus is your guys who aren't strong enough or just are younger. And then your advanced plus is, for us, the guys that we really trust, we'll try and auto-regulate some of their stuff, you know, based off of the way they feel that day, instead of just like, hey, I don't give a shit how you feel, you're hitting 85% today.
For five reps, gun yeah. to your forehead.
But so that strong enough number for us, we will have those, but it'll be based off of a guy's body weight. And some of those numbers are just way too high. Like Matt Ray, the guy with the Saints now, had one. And I want to say it was like he found that any back squat over like 1.7 didn't correlate to speed. And most guys skill.
But does it somewhat correlate to moving people?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think there's definitely a different aspect to an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Potentially, like, you want those guys to be stronger.
Anybody in the box. Anybody for sure. in the box, including yeah. your running backs, they have to move folks.
Yeah, and so those positions is obviously going to be more important. But when you're talking about like just trying to get a guy's speed better, get a guy to move better, anything past that like 1.7 of a back squat, which is a relatively low in my eyes. Like when I think of strong guys, like
– yeah, that's low. You know,
even a Josh Jackson, like a skinnier dude.
Well, he was freaky strong.
Oh, he's twitched up as can be too. But like, you know, Desmond King had a huge back squat as a DB.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's just guys at every position that you could think of that you're like, oh, that guy moves
Amani
more.
Jones had a low,
too big of a
back. Overall body weight and way too yeah. high of a back squat.
Yeah, he was just a freak.
1.7 is really low, honestly.
Yeah, but that's the direct correlation
to speed.
Improving to speed. Yeah, yeah.
So for us, we've come up with kind of our own markers, and most of that is based off of the front squat, split squat, bench press, and two other kind of separate markers that we have is everybody should be able to do a single leg squat. I don't care if you're a 350 pounds offensive lineman, you should be able to do a single leg squat up on a box successfully. And then everybody should do some variation of a pull up, like a neutral grip, dead hang, chin over the bar. Don't care how heavy you are, you should be able to do those things if you want to have healthy shoulders, healthy knees, and just be an overall solid athlete. But as soon as they reach like a strong enough tier, they're probably going to be in that advanced group anyway. But sometimes you have to use your judgment. Like we have this kid, Kevin Burkett, who came in as a freshman and could have easily been on the advanced card. I think he was a miss by a lot of FBS programs, came in, played as a freshman. He's like 300 pounds right on the dot when he got here, maybe 298. Close to a 9-foot broad jump, like 28-inch vertical as an offensive lineman.
Damn.
Moves really well for an offensive lineman. But he could have handled a advanced card day one, but then where are you taking them? You know, that's kind of what we talked about. How are you still going to PR year four, year five? So he did our basic 1x20 program. He was in there with the freshmen.
One by
time 20. Under tension, baby.
Oh yeah. 20. Yeah. Just general, the most general thing. Like the all-time quote that I fall back to is, don't use a hand grenade when a fly swatter would do the trick. Like if you're a young 18-year-old kid, you're going to get strong with really basic shit. So there's just no reason for them to be in there busting out fringe contrast or accommodating resistance.
But like, damn, is it fun.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it looks good on Instagram if you're a high school strength coach, but it's not the best thing for the athletes to do. And so, you know, a year later through that, he's well into a 400-pound front squat, you know, no problem as a 300-pound guy. I think he's hit 400 for like a cluster set of six this summer, like 415, somewhere in that range. But his broad jumps up over 9 foot, his vertical jumps up closer to like 32 to 34. And
what's his body weight?
He did is insanely basic stuff. And, you know, I would venture to say, just based off of the route that all of our other guys have taken to this point that have made it through things, he'll continue to improve by going through that kind of phased approach. But so he stayed on a foundation and a foundation plus card his first 2 years, but now he's on our advanced card and same thing, still able to make progress year three in the program, even as one of your most advanced high responder guys immediately and coming in with one of the highest floors out of anyone on the team.
In those 2 years, what does body weight go up?
He's like 318 now, and he just stays there. He doesn't really have any.
20 pound increase is what, 7.5% body weight?
Yeah, still a pretty good increase. And to
and he went up 5 inches in vertical jump. That's getting explosive.
And in the 10-yard dash, he's so the way that we run it, because I hate the human error element. So, you know, if we're running it and I'm starting the stopwatch every time, like, I don't know if you actually got faster or if I just was slower starting the lasers. So we set the laser up at 1 yard and we set the second laser up at 10 yards. So our times make no sense compared to anybody else's, but they're 100% reliable.
It's a good
time. It's repeatable.
Yeah, it's repeatable. Like, I'm not going to give it to an NFL scout and say, oh, yeah, Kevin Burkett runs a 1.39. He'd be like, no, he doesn't. Like, yeah, I know he doesn't. He runs a 1.39 9-yard dash timed via 10 yards, which doesn't make any sense. But he is, like, top 15 on our team in the 10-yard dash as a guy weighing 318 pounds.
Sheesh.
It's incredibly impressive.
I mean, that's an NFL player right there.
Yeah, he's a guy that should have a shot for sure.
What is like your metric for when you say strong enough? At what point do you say
we just,
like, this is strong enough? You know, going after further strength gains is just not worth the return on investment.
Yeah, so we kind of covered that a little bit before we got on. But like, if I had to put a firm number on it, like for the front squat specifically, I think if you're over 1.5, anything past that is kind of a waste of time. And that's probably too high of a number for a front squat variation. All the split squat variations that we do, closer to like 1.25 times body weight. But we'll have guys, Cole Coleman, he was an undrafted guy to the Colts this year. He, as a skill guy at 192 pounds, he's in one of those Instagram videos that Kulik sent me and it was losing his mind over. He was split squatting like 365 for, I think, 3 or 4 reps at 190 pounds. So that's certainly in
that class. So strong, dude. That's so asinine.
Yeah, because you guys don't back squat and your like team average for split squat is like 750 single leg.
We don't back squat. But the exact team average for split squat is definitely over 315. I think this year we were like 328 pounds as the average.
Christ. Crazy.
And that's taken into account. We've got, you know, I think our walk-ons are a little bit different than the walk-ons. Shout out walk-off or washed up walk-ons.
Shout out to us, huh?
Yeah. The walk-ons at Iowa are a special group where you have so many guys who are really good football players. In-state tuition at Iowa is a pretty fair rate. You got guys who come there wanting to play football and are athletic enough to play football. Most of the walk-ons.
Little dicks and big chips.
Most of the walk-ons that we get are you have to be extremely wealthy to walk on at Elon.
I was just going to say, I have a picture in my mind of what your walk-on looks like, and they look like a guy whose dad was a rower at an Ivy League school.
And does math for a living.
Don't get me wrong. We've had a couple walk-ons who have contributed and turn out to be good football players, but we also have some guys who, you know, they love playing football and they're great. You know, they're fun guys to have in the weight room, but they are severely lacking from a physical skills department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I understand that.
Personally, I understand that as well.
feel like I was physically lacking too, but probably not compared to these guys.
Kluver, you were.
Yeah, I have 5'10" and 5'10"
short, fat, and bald.
Short, fat, bald, and yeah.
And look at you now. You know, you trimmed off one of those things.
So I was kind of interested in like where you've kind of gone with conditioning, like you, especially like offensive linemen, they're not doing a whole lot of, or I don't know how much running you're doing, but you're doing a lot more like sled pushes, stuff like that.
I was going to ask the same question. Like how far does a lineman run? Do you ever have them sprint more than 10 yards?
We do have them sprint more than 10 yards. We will do speed work. So like our typical setup would be for our skill guys and semi guys, anyone that's outside the box, max velocity is going to be a key speed day for us. So the number one predictor of a hamstring strain is going to be an inadequate exposure to high speed distance. So you have to get guys running fast and expose them to a good volume of high speed distance. And to us, you know, looking at GPS data, a game, most of our skill guys are probably going to get like 250 to 300 yards over 16 miles per hour. So our main barometer that we want to get to in the summer is like 300 plus yards with adequate rest on their freshest day of high speed distance and make sure it's done with good technical proficiency. On that same day, our linemen will still get some exposure to high speed distance because you don't want a defensive end or D tackle running down a screen play or just pursuing something 20, 30 yards downfield. And that's the first time that he's ran that distance.
Yeah.
No different than your offensive line, you know, pulling, getting out on a screen, having to chase down an interception. You just never know what kind of situation that they're going to get in. But for any of our like true max speed, high intensity speed work, our linemen, we usually cap somewhere right around the 20 yard mark. With obviously a huge emphasis on that first 10 yards and getting out of their stance and then moving an external stimulus as powerfully and as quick as they can. So ton of prowler work, ton of sled work for those line guys. And
that's
spilling
the best
into our
way to condition as a lineman. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, so I think that was one of my Instagram posts. That or Elon Performance One this summer was kind of a glimpse of some of the stuff that we do with our linemen. And, you know, if you're looking at any sport and you're just trying to work backwards from the game, okay, football is 4 to 6 seconds of play. You're going to get between 15 on a really, really short snap count, up tempo type team to a 35 second rest in between. Average, I think, is like 27 seconds. And average number of plays in a series is like 6 to 9. You're going to have 7 to 8 series a game. You're going to have like 75 plays. So you take that script and you can apply that to your entire football team. Okay, here's kind of some of the key bases that we need to check. Now, when you go to what actually causes fatigue for your skill guys, it's getting in and out of cuts. It's a ton of volume, ton of high speed distance. For your line guys, there's next to none of that. Everything is contact with another human. They're battling someone for that entire 4 to 6 second span, especially on a run play, even on a pass play. You're engaged with somebody else, and that is what is causing the fatigue. Mm-hmm. And anyone like Drake, you know, someone that gets into the Brazilian jiu-jitsu or anything like that, any wrestlers out there know how exhausting it is to lock up with somebody and battle them just for a few seconds.
Wrestling Tuesdays are absolute misery, dude. It's miserable. Wrestling is so hard.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people are missing the mark when they'll go from spring ball, where you're practicing and you're battling the offense and defensive line, all the way to fall camp, where you haven't done anything engaged against another human as a form of conditioning. Mm-hmm. Not only from an energy system development standpoint, like being prepared physically to handle that level of stress from like a heart rate response and be prepared to go to the next play, but you wouldn't run a 40-yard dash without sprinting in preparation for that. Same way, I don't think you should be tackling, putting your hands on somebody else and not getting your shoulders, elbows, wrists, all of your joints accustomed to striking other humans and doing things against that external stimulus. So
neck is the biggest one. First few days of putting a helmet on, hitting folks, your neck hurts like you never thought it could hurt before.
Big time.
And part of it, too, is just carrying around a helmet that you don't wear for an extended period of time, which I think the NCAA is still missing the mark on quite a few of the rules in college football, obviously. You go from 8 hours in the summer and right into 20 hours when you start fall camp, just a casual 200% plus increase in workload, no matter what. No shoulder pads, no helmets, which I get why those rules exist, because people would screw that up badly.
Oh, yeah, people would abuse it. Exactly, yeah.
But at the same point, people who are rational and just trying to do the best thing for the athletes would probably, you know, no different at Iowa. We threw vest on for some of our conditioning. When you have the funds to do that, obviously that's one really smart way to do it. Kurt Hester, he was just voted strength coach of the year this past year. He was at Tulane this past season, and he is awesome at his job. He has guys wear vests and then beanies just to get accustomed to the heat since they're down in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Yep. Just because you get that helmet on, it's a completely different level of getting used to that. But so for our linemen, sled pushes and sled pulls is one day of our conditioning typically. And then the other day of conditioning, especially as we get towards July, is human-on-human battles against somebody else. So
shout out to Matt Drills at University of Florida. Did you see that?
That compliance officer is like, man, who put this stuff out?
I was so jealous. You know how fun that would have been?
They had guys actually fighting each other on the
ground. What do your specialists do for conditioning?
So they condition once a week.
Fuck.
Just because nice. I do think, you know, our long snappers, like, they need the speed work.
Yeah.
For the same reason, like, they have to get down the field, hopefully make a tackle if they're actually in that position. The conditioning level, I mean, you're playing 8 snaps a game if it's a peak game. Running down the field.
I was so over-conditioned, it was fucking stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they condition once a week just so they can feel like a part of the team.
So you hold them out of conditioning just so they can get shit on more by the other guys on the team?
Well, the other day, I mean, they just serve no purpose, and honestly, they're just more in the way. So I send them in, and they hit zone 2 on the bike until we're, you know, the rest of the squad's ready to come in and lift, and then they can join us again.
That's amazing. Man.
Sounds like a cushy gig down there in Elon.
sounds like I need to re-up my college eligibility and get down to Elon. Speaking of college, if you're a college athlete and you wanted to make illegal bets like some of the Iowa State players this year, you would do it with our title sponsor, and that's Betfred. We're big time on this podcast, Nick.
Big time.
And if you want to place bets on Elon, which is probably illegal this year.
100% illegal, yeah. But I don't even know. Apparently, unless you're in the state of Iowa, nobody cares if you bet on games.
Well, and KF had a lot to say about that.
Yeah.
KF had a little bit to say about the Cyclones and the Hawks being the only ones getting chopped up by the Department of trying to beat up on athletes. But let's say you were trying to get away with it. You use Betfred, title sponsor of the Walk-Ons this year. Super excited to be working with them. On Thursday, you're listening to this on Monday's podcast, but on Thursday, if all goes well, and the tech guy, that being me, figures it out. We'll have a segment as part of that episode. Ward's Winners will be back, of course.
Let's go.
Ward's Winners, betting segment of every preview show this year. And we'll have some Betfred representation on the show to talk odds, talk what we're looking at in the Big Ten, some of the bigger games across the country. Download the Betfred app, Iowa app, right now. And I believe there's a new player sign-up bonus as well. They all got those cool bonuses. So Betfred, shout out to them. Going back to something else you said, Nick, which I thought was really interesting, probably cool for you, is the fact that you really have, when you talked about getting a class all the way through, you really are just in the first couple of years of seeing a full data set, which is for you, who we know as a kind of a nerdy numbers guy. When
big analytics guy.
Yeah, it's probably really been fun for you to look at that stuff over the past two seasons.
Yeah, I mean, that was my one of my main goals when I came here was I want to see at least one class all the way through. And
you didn't want to get axed before that?
That's always a good goal, is to get fired in year one or two. But I wanted to see one class all the way through, just because you have all these ideas. You know, Weissman, who was on the show recently, and myself, like, all we did when we were younger coaches there at Iowa and we're not programming everything for the team is you're trying ideas on yourself. You're testing stuff out. And
two absolute freakazoids to test
just,
it out.
Just going through monster cycles of Weissman.
all time guy.
He's probably the best test subject you could have. Like, Weiss, here's the deal. You've heard of 85 for 5, right? We're actually going to do 85
for 8. The worst test subject you could ever have, because he is the most disciplined human on the planet and actually does everything that everyone else should do, but just refuses to do.
Like, Weiss, we need you to do 90% for 10. We just need you to do it.
Right, yeah. He's not your typical college athlete.
No, there was one day, I want to say it was like 2016, that we were doing some really weird stuff training, and he trap bar deadlifted 545 for 100 reps for time. Yeah.
All right. So I think he was like trap barring probably like 800 pounds or something like that around that time.
I guess it's only like,
I'm going to guess 70%. I'm going to guess he got that in under 2 hours.
Oh, he got that thing in like 32 minutes, man. You're he performed like 5 reps a minute.
That's unbelievable. That
is what?
Yeah, it was him and I want to say the Paulson twins were in there, because they're just cool dudes who are just always in the weight room hammering protein shakes in their cowboy boots.
Max.
I was cleaning 315 for 100 reps. I had like a goal doing that. And Weissman's like, well, I hate cleaning, so I'll just trap bar deadlift 545 for 100. Way worse, Weissman.
That's so...
Yeah, I want to say it was like 32 minutes.
That's freaking incredible.
Which most people will never touch that in their life.
And I was just going to say, so for the 100. Listeners at home, if you want to take... I mean, Weiss probably weighs what, like 230?
Probably 225, 230.
So if you want to take about 2.5 times your body weight and throw that on a trap bar... Go see how fast you can do that weight for 100 reps, and not a single person listening to this will beat what Weissman did. In fact, you won't even get close, and you'll probably end up injured. So
the majority of listeners probably can't do that just one time.
I don't think I can trap bar 2.5. No, I can't. I can't do 500.
It's 2.25, but less than 2.25, 2.2.
I could. I might be able to touch 500, not currently though, because right now I have the lower spinal of a 70 to 80 year old woman.
Speaking about like stuff like testing out and your stuff, is there anything that you're testing out right now on some of your minions or yourself? Anything that's got you curious?
Only CrossFit on himself. Question.
For myself, I do not train to be an athlete anymore. Really, I will make some of my younger staff do stuff like that. We'll definitely make the interns do stuff like that. But really, everything that we're changing at this point is like, you know, you have your 90% of things that are principle based and things that you know that work. And then you've got, say, your 10% of things that you're dabbling in and trying new things. And most of that, like this year, we went away from all of our flying 10 work. So we used to be timing shit on lasers, just letting it rip. 30-yard build up, 10-yard fly. Guys just hammering it. Yeah. And guys absolutely love that stuff.
What were they getting that 10 yards in?
Oh, sub 1 second for sure. Yeah. If you're good. Yeah.
Good.
But we have like 30 guys plus on GPS. So to me, it's more when we're in the summer, we have everybody's miles per hour and we're tracking that stuff. So we got into a lot of like sprint, float sprint, just trying to get guys to run better, which I think is a huge missing piece and a big area of emphasis on why there's so many hamstring injuries in the sport of football. But getting a ton of
hamstrings. They're not using their hip flexors. They're not getting their knees up. They're just hamstringing it.
Yeah. And, you know, I think poor mechanics is one thing. I think, you know, bad practice loads and just a mismanagement of how to handle camp. And then really just a lot of strength coaches not getting enough high speed distance in the off season. People are like, oh, we'll just run 10-yard dashes all summer and be good to go. Like, no, you won't. you're just going to have, you know, you could have zero hamstring injuries all summer and then get to camp and have six hamstring injuries and pat yourself on the back. Like, oh, we did a good job because nobody got hurt all summer. Like your job's to prepare them for camp and for the game. So you still miss the mark. But I think that's one thing is just trying to push
the envelope. You just blame the head coach for having too much volume that day. We had
that. It could be the case to be fair, but, you know, you got to do everything that you can to separate the athletes and prepare them. I think two is really just involving as much of the football activities as you can in your 8 hours within the limits of the current NCAA rules. So we've had this camp the least soft tissue injuries that we've ever had. We haven't had one person in our two deep miss a single practice for a soft tissue injury.
What?
That's an actually incredible accomplishment.
That's impossible.
It's not. We had a freshman pull his hamstring on like practice number 8. And it was pretty minor. We don't MRI stuff. We're not on that level unless it's like serious injury, but he was probably like a grade 1 hamstring strain. He was back in like 7 days.
Was he a guy you had throughout the summer or did you show up at camp?
No, so he was there for the second half of summer. Our freshmen come in a little bit later.
So you only had him for 4 weeks?
Like 5, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And to be fair, like we probably undercooked them. Like we're not getting nearly as much high-speed exposure for them just because everything is so technical emphasis with them. And it's probably one thing I think we could try and ramp up a little earlier. But they also just get less volume because it's pretty rare that you're going to get a ton of guys stepping in as freshmen and being massive contributors. So I think a huge part of that, though, is how much of the football stuff that we've involved. So getting the player-led practice stuff in there, the Indy with the coaches, and just getting them exposed to as much football as possible and building up those volumes throughout the week has been a huge thing. And then in the weight room obviously getting guys to jump, run everything as fast as they possibly can. I think a huge impact for us has been just the loaded jump stuff that we're doing. I think, you know, everyone spends so much time on the hang clean, hang snatch. And quite frankly, I just think they're wasting a ton of time.
Really?
We definitely have. Oh yeah, absolutely. I would venture to guess have probably as many as most FBS programs, guys jumping 40 inches plus, and we haven't touched a hang clean or a back squat. I think the loaded jump stuff that we've been doing, and this is the first summer where we had like tendo units, like we've had at Iowa on all of our racks for our advanced guys, and that made a huge difference. And then getting into some auto-regulated stuff for those guys now that we have the technology to do so, because we redid our weight room within this past year, has been huge. And those guys ended up with less volume. But a guy, Eric Corum, he was kind of one of the leading guys on like the whole high-performance idea. He brought GPS really into the fold at Florida State back in the Jimbo Fisher era.
Shout out to it, those crooked bastards.
So he was way ahead of the curve, but he actually did, when he did his PhD, he did a research study on auto-regulated training. And they basically took anyone that opted in and went by how you felt that day and you felt good, let it ride. You know, you could hit some extra open sets. You could push the envelope on those days. If you came in, you didn't feel as good, you would try and listen to those guys a little bit and back things off, adjust the training. And that group ended up doing, I want to say it was somewhere around like 82% of the volume of the other groups, but had like insane increases over that group through that auto-regulated method. So installing some of that for our older guys, I thought was really helpful this summer. And I felt like we did less than we've done typically with those guys, less volume in a lot of cases, but accomplished a lot more during that time.
So is how that, do you do that then? Ahead, do you have like a preset card? Like, hey, this is if the guy's feeling A plus,
so we,
or if you're coming feeling like, hey, coach, I'm sore, I'm not ready to go 100%. Like, I got a different card for you that day or something, or you just knock off percentages?
The easiest thing to do is just prescribe a speed. So, okay, like, if you're looking at things that are going to be linked up, let's say you're coming in and it's we got 75, 80% today for 5x5, some basic outline like that. Instead, for the advanced group, you could say, hey, we have 5x5 at 0.75 meters per second, or 0.5 meters per second would actually be a better comp to that percentage. But you're going to have percentages that align really closely with speeds, and you're going to have speeds that align with the quality you want to train. So say the focus is power. Like, we want to be between 68 and 72% ideally. But what is that speed? It's going to be somewhere from the 0.85 to 1 meter per second. And so if I just prescribe that speed, like 0.9, get there, and I give them a percentage that's probably going to correlate to that. But Drake's building up, and he feels terrible. And so he ends up down 20 pounds from where he was supposed to be, but he's hitting the stimulus of the day. Like, he's okay, still getting what we wanted. Versus you walked in and you got 9 hours of sleep, you come in, you're just feeling fantastic, just bang down a C4, and you're ripping 1 meter per second at that weight. Then for you, okay, hey, bump up 5-10 pounds because we want you at this speed. And you might end up getting in throughout that session an extra, let's say, 250 pounds of load volume on the day than you were expected to. Drake might have got the exact opposite, 250 pounds less. But you both accomplish the exact same goal. And it's just so fluid, especially with an older athlete. You guys know, if you come in season, it's like, hey, you got hit 85% today on clean. That shit feels like 98% some days.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think when you're a younger athlete, there's a certain part of just discipline, doing the right things, and you really shouldn't be as banged up of like, I don't really give a shit how you feel, you're going to go ahead and hit that. Versus with your older guys who you really trust, and you know that they're coming in with the intention of, I want to get better. They're maximizing everything they can to get better. We want to listen to how they feel and really maximize their performance long term. I think that that's probably the best way to go. And we use Team Builder, which is like a software instead of the Excel cards. So like, when you guys go up, you log into your rack and it has everything on there. It'll have the speed, et cetera. And you can provide options too. So like, for certain guys in season, might be like, hey, if you don't, you know, if you feel banged up today, a guy with like history of low back issues or someone's wrist is banged up, like, you can just hit the tag select button and I'll let guys pick any movement in that domain. And as long as it's accomplishing the task that we want to get accomplished from it, like, I don't give a shit if they like that exercise better than the other one. And it's a guy I really trust, and it's the time of year where that makes sense, I'll let them pick what movement that they're going to do.
That's awesome. Yeah, really, dude.
Working on some RPE type shit.
Definitely requires a mature athlete, though. Like,
yeah, which is
the first year, second year, maybe some third year guys.
Our advanced and our advanced plus programming, there's really not a tier to it. Like, it's the exact same. Like, we might have a fifth year senior who just stays on the advanced guard because they aren't a high enough character guy who I'm like, hey, he's all in, he's going to do the right things. He's just a great athlete who's good at football. He's going to stay on that card. First, our guys who I know that they're really high character, they want to get better, they've got good habits, I'll switch them over to that card because I know I can actually trust them. And that has to be a huge piece when you're getting into things like that. Because if you have a guy that does shit with really bad intent, it's not going to get any better with that auto-regulated method.
Are more people adopting this data? Because it honestly sounds pretty awesome.
I think it's kind of hit or miss. I think Alabama kind of set back strength and conditioning for like years when Scott Cochran was there. Everyone just wanted to hire guys like him who were just raspy voice yelling at dudes and had no clue what they were doing.
They all wanted a team full of five-star athletes.
That would be great too. But the what's crazy is, you know, they're the first team that really made the change when they hired Dave Ballou and Matt Indiana, from Indiana.
Yeah.
And they start implementing all this stuff, and their injury rates are going down drastically. They kind of rise back up, and now Georgia's overtaken a little bit. But I think they were one of the teams that realized, and like props to Nick Saban, a guy who's on top of the game, for realizing, hey, this is kind of a missing piece in what we're doing. And I think there's other teams like that. Our baseball guy actually is going to the University of Virginia, who was just in the College World Series, and they're one of the top six teams in the country. And they kind of realized that a gap for them is somebody who doesn't understand the science side and the modern era of what performance should be, and are making changes. And I think you've got schools like that all over the country where they are really adopting and trying to maximize that area of performance. And I think it's a huge edge, but also you can't be naive enough to think like the school that gets the best recruits year in and year out and has the best players typically wins at the highest rate.
For sure. Yeah.
You're but there's a reason schools like Iowa and other small, you know, quote unquote, small schools who aren't getting these big recruits. Like every year I was putting guys in the NFL, you know, you're investing in other areas. Like I think in 2015, we led the Big Ten in nutrition budget. I want to say we spent like $3 million or something.
Hell yeah, we did.
Compared to everybody else. And that's, you know, everybody's looking for a way to find an edge and improve. And right now, I think the low hanging fruit in college football is actually utilizing GPS data. Like you can build out practice models so much more successfully to keep guys healthy. Because if you have all things equal, like if Iowa and Wisconsin have the exact same talent level and are playing each other, the team that is fresher and more tactically prepared is going to win at a higher rate and healthier.
What about grit?
You got to have that dog in you.
Got to have the dog.
Got to have the dog.
Need a bunch of dogs.
Yeah, I think in the NFL, that's a huge thing now too. I think there was like a stat out there that said like the team with the lower injury rate wins. It was like some like 60%+ of the time, you know.
We need to get you one of these shirts, Nick.
That is incredible.
We need some fucking dogs, all right? We ain't looking for no pussies around here. Need guys who have the will versus the want.
All time so, king.
I got a question for you. Is there any people that you you don't have to say any people, but is there any ideology or programs out there that you think it take it too far and try to outsmart themselves in the area of S&C?
Gota.
Fucking idiots.
Honestly, in the world of college football, I don't think that there's too many people in that area currently. That's a good question, though. I'd have to think about that. I think there's certainly people who are overdoing it. Because in the grand scheme of things, the weight room and everything that we do in the performance world is still just general physical preparedness. Like you have to be able to play football well. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to come first. But I think that there's far more people on the other side of the spectrum that are just old school meatheads and are so sure. far away from optimizing performance in the world of college football. Like I would love to see Wisconsin just absolutely stink with some of the stuff that I've seen coming out of their camp.
Yeah. Where's the Elon videos? If you guys masks.
You guys don't have the masks and stuff and the whistle and lights going for max out squats.
Big culture guys, you know,
Jesus Christ. Unbelievable. I have a completely different question that veers off and is only relevant to you and I. You have two children.
Yep.
Do you ever, like, as they grow up and you start to see them, like, I watch my daughter just like in squat positions and I'm like, oh my God, ass to grass. You know, like, because kids have unbelievable mobility and shit. As a parent, are you like excited to have all this knowledge and like just not like mold
your
them.
Kids going to be test subjects.
They're just, they're like, you're always going to have the perfect like biomechanical feedback for your children as they start. How old is your daughter's older, right?
Yeah, she's 5.
Yeah, so she probably plays soccer. Yeah, because we had to move this podcast for a soccer game, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you're already developing. She's probably out there being a stud already because she's got perfect fucking chin to hip. And like, you know, just she's sprinting down the sideline. The other kids don't even know.
I'll send you a video. She's got her pullovers on absolute lock.
Really?
For all the CrossFit people out there. Oh, yeah. She does gymnastics.
Fuck yeah.
But honestly, I don't know. I think that's a fine line. My dad was a good athlete, not a coach by any means and not an expert on movement, but he never really like fucked with me. And I don't know. I see some parents in the way that they handle their kids and it's just downright disturbing how much that they want to live through their kids. Oh, yeah. And my number one goal is that my kids just enjoy the hell out of whatever they're doing and have fun. But I'm always happy to coach them up, but I'm not going to go out of my way to do it. Like my wife is coaching their like little kids soccer team, but they're just out there having fun.
But
I will do anything I can to mold them into, you know, the best athletes they can be. But I'm also not big on like, hey, my son has to play this sport or this position. Like, I just want my kids to have fun playing sports, hopefully.
But if
good
he comes
dad to DeMarco, man.
Yeah. If he or she comes to you though and they're like and they start to understand like,
oh, I'm getting them dialed in, no
and
doubt.
They're let's like, go. And they start seeing college athletes and they're like, holy shit, that's cool. I want to be one of them. And they're like, dad, I teach me how to be, I want to be an absolute stud. You're gonna be like, well, guess what?
We're about to start punch cooking. The phone, dial it up, baby.
Well, the easiest thing is, you know, kids just replicate your behavior. So they watch us work out. They're doing the exact same stuff.
Yep.
They watch you play. Like if, you know, if you're a terrible athlete and you don't know how to throw a baseball and you're teaching them to throw a baseball, like I don't care what cue you're giving them, like learn to throw a baseball, they'll learn to throw a baseball. Or throw on some sick YouTube videos of Randy Johnson or something.
The man.
The big unit.
That fucking guy. So you're not going to be the – you ever watch the 30 for 30 Robo QB?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That I dude prefer was not to be.
Psycho. He said that he was like – the kid was like a newborn baby. He's like stretching out the thing's hamstrings.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Keep them loose.
There's a great book out there, Bounce, by Matt Saeed. So he was a world champion table tennis player, like played in the Olympics as a ping pong guy. And the whole book is basically if you've read Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers and how you get just kind of in unique situations will drastically improve your outcomes.
Whoever's listening, by the way, write these fucking books down. If Nick says a book title, you read the motherfucker.
Kevin just wrote it down.
Yeah.
Bounce is all time. Bounce is Outliers for sports. It goes into this one story of how at one point there was like 6 girls in Russia from a town of like, don't quote me on this, but let's say population, like a few thousand. And there were 6 girls at the same time, all in the top 25 in the world rankings in tennis. And at that time, I want to say there was 1 or 0 in the entire United States in the top 25. And how if you just get put in these weird situations,
it's
you know,
product of environment.
100%. And so there was a guy in there by the name of Laszlo Polgar, and he wanted to run an experiment on his kids that like, I think, yeah, he was in Poland. So he thought that the Polish like education system was flawed and basically that you could take any person and they could become exceptional at something if it was not completely innate. Like you have to win the genetic lottery to play in the NFL. There's just no way around that. So he picked.
Well, I wouldn't say that's true because Jake Gervais is out there just signed with the
True.
I mean, that fucking guy.
Yeah, some guys can make it with a little grit, but still, even though I'll crack on Gervais 10 times out of 10, he's athletic.
Relative he's to most something. People, he still has more than 99% sure. of people. Yeah.
But so
and no, and he can't pay for internet, but fuck that guy. I mean.
So this guy decided he wanted his kids to be like world champion chess players, and every single one of them started to produce at a higher level faster than the one before. And he had 4 daughters, I think 3 or 4, and all of them became grandmaster chess players. Oh, and I mean, it was psychology 101 to a T. Like, he gave them like chess pieces when they were kids as like a toy.
Yeah.
Like, where they just grew like a fondness for it. And then they realized, oh, this is involved in this game and my dad plays it. You want to be like your dad. So like when they were like, I think the first girl was like 5 or 6, he finally let her play. And then, you know, she's like fucking 13 and becomes a grandmaster or something.
This is something that I've personally had thoughts about myself. I strongly believe that the nature versus nurture, I think you can nurture the shit out of a skill or a...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. My God.
I would love to...
my daughter's going to run a 5-10-5 and 3-5.
I would love to see... you know, some data on, or just like myself, like if you had an adopted kid from birth and you could just see how much they become like their brother and sister from a completely different background. Like, I think, you know, good people typically come from really good parents, and there's some people who have, you know, really bad circumstances and can make things good. But your parents just dictate so much of your life through the way that they nurture you and mm-hmm. the way that they raise you. No different than when you go through a college football program or a high school program. Like, having a good coach, having a good teacher can just completely change the way that you operate and the trajectory of your life. So obviously it's a task that I'm sure, just like you, I take great pride in.
If you were to choose the route of, I want my daughter to be the best in the world at something, what are you picking?
Oof. Well, I just watched the FedEx thing today. Yeah, I'd say golf, man. A lot of money in that.
Well, men's golf more than women's, but yeah.
Oh, if you're the best woman, you can make all the money.
Yeah, you sure but, can with endorsements and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, do you think that golf requires the genetic lottery like basketball or football, or do you think anyone could be a great golfer? Like,
do you think golf is the hardest sport skill-wise?
100%. Yeah, that's a
– We had this like, conversation.
Because you watch really good athletes like – football players who have, you know, played, let's say you played soccer, baseball, stuff like that growing up. You go play pickup basketball, you're probably not awful. Mm. You go kick a ball, you're probably not terrible at it. You can throw a baseball, you can field a baseball. Like, some guys go pick up a club and they just look like the worst athletes in the world.
Completely foreign to them. Like, yeah. I got to play golf with Jordan Lomax one time. Jordan Lomax is a great fucking athlete. And it was completely foreign to him. It was like he's trying to speak a different language that he'd never studied before.
Well, and even like a good baseball player isn't necessarily a good golfer. Like, it's such a very
Bo Bauer's
a good baseball player.
He was
a great baseball player in high school.
Okay. Cole Fisher, though, he's putting out some scorecards on Instagram. He appears very good.
Cole Fisher golfs
all the time. That guy is a full-blown addict.
He does three things. He golfs, he does CrossFit, and he's an engineer.
And he's handsome as fuck,
too. And he's
he's got it going. Yeah, he's living a good life.
And he's about to have a kid. He's about to be a dad.
Yeah.
So
shout out Cole Fisher.
Congrats on the sex, Cole.
Also, I might see Cole this week because I think I'm going into the gym to work out. I'll tell him hi from the boys.
I got one last question. Take your average human age 25 to 40, and they want to be just slightly more athletic so they can go play, like, I don't know, intramural sports or pickup sports. What three exercises are you having them do?
I'll go with a unique approach here. Everyone thinks in the weight room. I would say get out and actually sprint once a week. Like, if you could sprint 10 yards, you could sprint 10 yards once a week, you know, get out and run 5, 10 yard dashes. I think that's a huge deal for like your longevity as a human being, staying as healthy as you can be, and obviously staying athletic. Two would be some sort of jump variation in the weight room. So loaded jumps, empty, freaking just extensive jumps. Number one fear in my life is tearing an Achilles. Like, pick up basketball 25 to 45. That's like my worst fear in the world. They need to be doing like 200 contacts a week minimum of extensive jumps, like 70%, just rebound, get off the ground, rip some pogos.
Shameless plug, the TKG daily program that I put out. We do jumping plyometrics, just saying.
Hop on that thing. And then last would be some variation of like a single leg squat. I think if you're like my only fear for a 25 to 45 year old person who's wanting to stay athletic is a Achilles or an ACL tear.
Hear that, folks? Stop going to the YMCA. Stop going to the YMCA, going over to the bench rack, doing a few of them, fucking doing a couple rows, and going home. Get on the fucking horse. Go run, jump, squat.
If you're trying to look good at the pool, and that's your only goal from 25 to 35, 45, we'd have some different outlines. But that was the question post, you know?
If you're trying to look
good, I'm also interested in your answer to that question, though. I'm sure there's a lot more people actually more interested in the answer to that question.
For that, you need to be ripping about 3 hours a week of zone two, low TRT. Intensity. You need some of that. A little wind stroll would help. And
eating a calorie deficit.
Calorie deficit is obviously the one standard that most humans just completely disregard. And then all you need in your life is 1x20. Just a shitload of volume and get a huge pump.
I'm telling you, the 20 rep program is the best program that you can ever do.
It's the best and the worst. Mentally, and it will make you mentally tougher for sure.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's awesome.
I do think that. How do I. You're programming for me, but outside of your programming that I follow, any other ideas on how I can make the games?
You're going to need performance enhancing drugs.
or
a couple of females on performance enhancing drugs. Because as you know, the females, if you can get on a team with good females, it's game over.
Yeah, you and I could make the games easy if we had a couple good girls.
Really thought you were going some other way with that two females thing. And I was like, damn, Nick, you got some freak in you, dog.
No, because in CrossFit, teams are two and two, two guys, two girls. And Nick and I are both games level team competitors.
Yeah, I would say Cole Fisher is too. That guy's
Cole is as well.
How about Cole Fisher second time? He's very good at CrossFit, though.
The fuck did Cole pay you, dude? Your Venmo open or what's going
nothing,
on here?
Nothing.
No, Cole's just got it like that.
But like a guy like I don't know, there's a lot of guys that played for Iowa football that could be good CrossFitters if they decide to get into it.
Not as good as me, but
probably.
No.
Who won in the open this year? You or Cole? Or in the quarters?
He got me because I'm not gonna make excuses. He got me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you had the lead going into the last event though, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard when you don't train with a rope ever, and then there's rope climbs in the workout.
Nine of them.
Yeah.
Smack in the mouth right at the end.
Yeah, right at the end of the workout. Yeah.
Kay Ward was a great CrossFit guy.
Yeah, it's just not for me, dog.
He's an all-time conditioning guy at Iowa.
Conditioning guy, we'd have to open his mobility up a lot.
Yeah, the mobility's a little restricted for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, two shoulder surgeries. That thing
is Gervas. Gervas is an all-time conditioning guy, but his shoulder mobility is – I mean, he's got a titanium T-spine if I've ever seen it.
Titanium. No,
I'm thinking about getting into triathlon a little bit. I started swimming a lot and biking. A
lot of zone two, K-Ward. A lot of zone two.
He was trying to get into mixed martial arts, and then he fucking blew his arm out.
Yeah, that was fun.
That sounds terrible. No, Tyler Wiegers would be a good CrossFitter as well.
He's a jiu-jitsu.
The problem with most of the guys we played with, honestly, are
you can only have one addiction at a time. You know, I would love to do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but I'm just too hooked on CrossFit.
Yeah. The thing with CrossFit and the guys we played with is most of them were just too tall, right? Like,
yeah, being tall is not helpful at all.
If you're 6'1", you're starting to really get to the upper limits of like, there's going to be some movements where you just have some range of motion disadvantages against guys like me.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Any more questions, Drake? Kevin?
Get G-Bone in here.
Oh, yeah, G-Bone.
Grant's here?
Yeah, he's in the background here.
What's up, G-Bone? Are we in the library already, man?
It's Library Gary.
It's syllabus week.
No, already. I mean, I've been in the library. This is we still don't have Wi-Fi at the place yet, but we're working on it. We're going to have it.
Any questions for our guy Nick here?
I don't know if you can answer, but can we get a record prediction for Elon?
Oh, wow.
Can be good this year?
I would assume so. Yeah, we're as good as we've ever been. 21 out of 22 positions. We have a grad transfer quarterback that just came in. So obviously, as you guys know, quarterback in college football is the key to everything. And Last year, the guy that we had, he made it to a couple mini camps, has had a few tryouts. And so, you know, we are a very, very good team because you have a good quarterback and you had a good surrounding core. Just hard to gauge because you don't know how good anyone else is going to be. But I'd say probably, you know, hopefully an eight plus win team and make the playoffs again, similar to last year.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. All
right. How do you like the playoff model, by the way? Do you think that's where the FBS
love the playoff model? Think that is where the FBS should go because nobody cares about the bowl games. Like nobody wants to play in the Bahamas Bowl, except you just get to go to the Bahamas, which is kind of sick.
I
remember when we went to the Pinstripe Bowl. Like nobody wants to go to New York and play in the Pinstripe Bowl.
It was
on a baseball field in tennis shoes. Like that was a nightmare.
That was a damn right like criminally negligent to make us play on that field.
Yeah. That's just for money and nobody cares. I don't know. I don't like those games. I think the playoffs mean more. The only thing that stinks in the FCS is it's just too poor. So it's like a bidding process. So I think they've changed it a little bit this year to where they're going to actually seed the top 16 teams, but it's a 24 team playoff in the FCS.
Wow.
And eight teams get a bye. So you're a top eight seed, you get a bye, and you're at home all the way through until the national championship. Unless you end up in a 1-2 your side of the bracket scenario. But then 9-24 just get thrown in to a 16 team playoff week one while the top eight get the bye. And that is based off of bids. So, like, let's say Delaware was one of those teams last year. They had a pretty high bid that, like, got them into the playoffs potentially. Like, they might not have been in if they didn't bid so much money.
They're just, and then they're buying their way in. Holy shit.
Kind of. I don't know. Wait, it's a weird process. There's a whole article.
You can be a losing team and bid.
No. They were a winning team, but, like, they were on the bubble. And, like, if you're on the bubble and you have this huge bid, and it's like, oh, well, we could make X number of dollars more if we pick them. I don't know. Kind of a weird situation. There was like this whole article on that last year.
Do you, like the schools themselves have to basically fund the playoff process then? Is that what it has to do with?
So we, as a school, put in a bid for if we wanted to host
because the media dollars aren't there or something?
Yeah. So we finished the year last year 11th in the country. Furman is who we ended up playing in the first round. They finished the year 10th in the country. So we had two of the top four teams, or I guess two of the top three teams of the 16 playing that opening weekend, playing each other because we were regionally close to each other. So it was a bus ride instead of a flight, so it's cheaper. Mm-hmm. And Furman hosted the game because they bidded more money than us Delaware, who we beat by like 30 points the second to last week of the season, hosted a home game against a non-scholarship conference champion and waxed them by like 30.
Jesus.
So,
yeah. That's not exactly.
Do I think it matters? No, because the top teams are probably in that top eight. Whoever's going to win the Natty is probably there. But you'd love to get a little bit further in the playoffs and make a run, obviously. So I think it's kind of a weird system just because there's not money there. But the FBS, I mean, there's so much money involved. It makes no sense not to have a huge playoff. Like, everybody would want to see these matchups, even if it's
– March Madness is one of the coolest things in all of sports.
100%. There's an upset every year. Like, even though in football I think it's harder to get an upset, like, every year there's an FCS team that beats a FBS team. Every year there's like random matchups where a team wins that shouldn't have won. Like, that stuff is going to happen, and it would be much more exciting television than throwing on ESPN3 and watching New Mexico State and somebody else battle it out. And
I'll tell you what, though.
Oh, Kevin dropped out there. I don't know where he went.
What happened to your mic, Kev?
I don't know. We cannot hear Kevin. He just dropped out. His fucking computer decided.
We good?
Now yeah,
we
you're on your
very, there he is.
Freaking Gervais internet strikes again. I was about to say, you put enough money in the Betfred app. load up on one of them Bahama Bowls games. It gets just as exciting as any national championship.
Tell you what, that Betfred Iowa app could make a lot of non-exciting games all of the sudden.
You got your mortgage payment riding.
I did see last night USC cost some people a lot of money.
I heard that.
But who bets 35, dude?
Some guy bet $6,000 for like a $600 payout I saw.
Mm-hmm.
That is like you're a degenerate at that point.
Yep.
I think they call that money laundering.
Yeah. Money laundering.
Yeah, I think I saw a bet. There's a ticket out there, $75,000 to win 300. You Alabama just money line over, like, I don't know if they're playing Mercer or something like that. Or
hey, it's a free 300 bucks.
Yeah, but
it's a risky one.
Like betting versus stopping in F1 right now. Well, Nick, we could talk to you for about 6 hours, and probably not good to do that because I'm sure you got to get up and run some advanced cards tomorrow morning or something like that. So,
just got my own training tomorrow and a little practice. It is a Wednesday practice for a Saturday game, basically. Weird schedule this week with the Thursday.
Some Badger ISO snatch tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. We're pushing 265, 275 maybe.
Wow.
I'm trying to back squat that right now and just get back into the back squatting. So, that's good times. We appreciate you coming on, spending the time.
No, thank you guys for having me. I enjoy tuning in to these regularly. Sad that I had to follow a legend like Weissman, though. Can't outdo that guy.
I don't know.
This is a pretty sweet episode. You're right. It is hard to outdo Weissman in anything, but it was
just a good legend. Yeah. He mentioned it. He came down and worked out with us last summer and like stayed with us for, I think he was here for like 3 days, watched a couple lift groups, but he came and popped in, and these dudes at the gym that I go to are like, who the fuck is that guy? Like, what the hell does he do? And I was like, dude, you think you know this Mark Weissman guy is an animal in this gym? I sent them his highlights at Iowa. They're like, this guy is a legend.
Yeah. He's one of those guys where like even dudes who are dudes,
he's a dude.
Get into a group of people and you're like, he's actually an alien. Like, there's aliens out there. When the FBI just released that we have confirmation that there's aliens, the article is just about Mark. if you just read the article, it's just about Mark and his upbringing. So it is what it is. Episode 449 of the podcast, last one of the off season, because I'm counting Thursdays as the first one of in-season pod. We'll be previewing Utah State, and we'll go from there. Anything else, boys?
Nah, man. Good luck this season, Nick.
DeMarco by a million. It.
Go Elon, dude. Elon by a fuck.
Elon, the Phoenix. Elon Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Swear?
Millie.
That's the shout out to Phoenix, baby.
Oh, yeah. Go Phoenix. And all go right.
Everybody listening, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. Until then, peace.
Peace.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million. We'll be right back.